Hello, welcome to the second of our Cambridge 105 Ashes podcast. I'm Chris Dewden. With me is Dom Marsh. Dom, we're not short of talking points, so let's get started straight away with the first test and then we'll move on to what's happened since. Great start for England on day one at the Gabba, and then not really sure what happened after that.
Downhill from there, Chris, wasn't it?
I stopped watching.
Really, it was the first two sessions. England owned, really, didn't they? Started off very, very well. It seemed at that point that the series was going to go, I guess, as everybody, or a lot of people expected. You know, England dominating, Australia collapsing again. And then the partnership between Johnson and Haddon rescued Australia that day. And they ended up on day one with, you know, whilst not a great total, something to play with, a couple of wickets in hand. And you just sensed perhaps that there was going to be a bit of a shift in momentum.
Yeah. We talked last week about how in the first test 3 years ago, it was Haddon alongside Mike Hussey that time that kind of turned it around and put on a big partnership, and Haddon again was the man, 94 in the end from 153 balls, and in the end run out. England really struggled to get him out. But day one, certainly the first two sessions, the paper talk was obviously all about Stuart Broad. Obviously, the Australians, especially the Brisbane Courier Mail, were having a great time laying into him. And they were refusing to mention his name before the game, just calling him the 27-year-old English medium pacer, I think, which I liked. And Broad, I think, actually is one of the England guys that would respond perfectly well to that. He wouldn't let it get to him, and he didn't. And he said, you know, at one stage when he was fielding on the boundary, he was kind of singing along with the crowd at one stage when they were laying into him. Yeah. And he'll embrace that kind of thing. But like, obviously, that was the kind of story, the main story before the match started. And then he came out and took 4 wickets on day one. And finish with 6. And like you say, it was all looking fairly rosy for England at that stage, and obviously looking like Broad had Clark kind of in his pocket. I think Broad's got Clark out in, what, 6 of his last 9 or 10 Ashes innings or something like that. But then, as we'll come on to, things kind of changed around a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Broad did handle it very well, didn't he? He plays... And I've heard this comment quite a few times now. He plays, I guess, like an Australian. He's quite aggressive and in your face, and I think
petulant, childish.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but there's, you know, and I think actually, whilst he is copping a lot of stick out there, I think there's some, you know, grudging respect for him as well. I think the Courier Mail, who have, you know, had their 15 minutes of fame, haven't they, really? Just a sort of local rag in Brisbane. But I think it was all... I know that there was a lot of talk from that paper, but, all with smiles on their faces, I'm sure. I don't think it was ever meant to be sort of taken too seriously. I know people like Shane Warne became very critical, didn't he, saying that the Australian media is worse than the British media, and really getting on their case and how much of a disgrace it was. But I think you just need to sort of take it with a pinch of salt and see it for what it really is. Just, you know, good coverage for the cricket, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So Australia were all out for 295 in the end in their first innings early on day two. And then England from 82 for 2 to 91 for 7, 91 for 8, was it?
I think they lost 6 for 9 at some point.
Yeah, 82 for 2 to 91 for 8.
Yeah, that middle period there. And, you know, it's one of those examples of when in cricket things start to shift and momentum starts to shift. It can all go very, very quickly. They were, you know, fairly well positioned. Peterson looking fairly comfortable with Carberry. And things just sort of fell apart. And, you know, Mitchell Johnson's obviously played a big part in that. You know, we talked last time in our last show about how, you know, a lot was going to depend on how Mitchell Johnson performed, whether or not he has changed, whether or not he's, you know, the Mitchell Johnson of old, or, you know, if there has been a change. And or evidence at the moment points to a change, but it's still early days yet. You know, I'm sort of reserving judgment until I see him at Adelaide, where the wicket perhaps won't be as helpful. Well, certainly won't be as helpful as Brisbane. He certainly, you know, that type of pitch really suits him. But having said that, he did bowl fantastically well, and it makes a huge difference when your team's got somebody who's bowling at, you know, 150 kilometres an hour plus, which England don't have. And I think you could just see the difference that makes.
It's just he's not always, and Darren Lehman kind of held his hands up and admitted to this, that Johnson isn't the most consistent bowler in the world, and Lehman was kind of saying, yeah, we take that because we know, we trust in that those kind of performances are going to come often enough to make it worth having him in the side almost, which is fair enough. If he does that again at Perth, then, you know, Australia can't lose a series, basically. Yeah. So
I mean, Mitchell Johnson's a match winner. He's been a, you know, a very, very good player for Australia. You know, he's taken something like 210 plus wickets, test wickets now, and he contributes with the bat. You know, in 2009, he was the International Cricketer of the Year. And, you know, I mean, he wins matches. It's the second time he's done it against England now. You know, he won the game for them and was man of the match in Perth during the last home Ashes series. And he's done it again at the Gabba. He's had some poor Ashes, I think, you know, it's fair to say, and they've been well documented. But, I mean, when he's on song, he's an out-and-out match winner. And I think, like Darren Lehman says, they're happy to accept the fact that sometimes he's going to leak runs and he's not always going to, you know, produce those results. But, you know, if you look at his record, it's very, very solid and comparable to a lot of the English players.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So England all out for 136. I'm annoyed with myself because I nearly mentioned this statistic last time on the podcast and I didn't, and it became relevant even more. That's now five tours in a row that England have been bowled out for under 200 in their first innings and of the first test. So January 2012 in Dubai against Pakistan, 192, and lost the match by 10 wickets. Then March that year in Sri Lanka, they were all out for 193 in their first innings and lost the match. November 2012 in India, 191. And then despite Cook's massive 176 in the second innings, they still lost by 9 wickets. And then March in New Zealand in that test series of three draws, all kind of weather affected, 167 in the first innings. And then do you want to guess who was it that scored 56 from 200 balls and batted for ages to help save the game for England? Stephen Finn coming in as night watchman, 56 in 5 hours to help England save that game. But again, and then 136 this week, so that's the last five tours now where England have been slow off the blocks and bowled out for under 200 in their first innings. It's, you know, that's rubbish. Quite frankly, this isn't a blip for people who are thinking, oh, England won the last Ashes series 3-0 and they've been recently number one test team in the world. No, this is, you know, 2 years now where they've been underperforming with the bat.
Yeah, well, at least in the first test, yeah. There's talk about this quite regularly, and it's obviously something they're aware of. So assuming it's not a, you know, some sort of game plan.
worked last time.
Yeah, well, in India it did. But, you know, so, you know, taking, you know, that out of the equation, it's obviously something that they're aware of and trying to work on and trying to remedy. But for whatever reason, it's not working. Now, they're, you know, traditionally slow starters. And with the exception of India, they don't normally recover either from that. Of course, the Pakistan series you referred to, they lost. They drew in Sri Lanka. They drew in New Zealand and could have quite easily have lost that series.
Yeah.
And if you look back at the last couple of Ashes series, whilst they did make over 200 in 10-11 in Australia at the Gabba, they only made...
It was only 260. And that was just bats to the wall from Ian Bell to get them
absolutely
up over 200.
And then there was I think they scored 215 at Trent Bridge in the first innings in the summer just gone. So, you know, there is a trend there. And I think they're very reliant on Cook. And with that opening partnership now, they've got somebody else there in Carberry. And the top three, of course, you know, Jonathan Trott's issue is well documented, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, there's an opening there now for Australia, and I think they sense that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we said in the last podcast that the sides on paper were fairly evenly matched, and neither of the sides were particularly great. So yeah, all it takes is one of the two sides to play really well, and you kind of feel like that would be enough. But there's four tests to go. I think for an England fan, you expect to lose at the WACA. So to lose one of the other matches, you're thinking almost straight away, we have to win Adelaide, otherwise this is all over. Which strictly speaking isn't true, and maybe they will produce something at Perth, but having seen how they batted at the Gabba, Perth is going to be all that and then some in terms of fast and bouncy. You just can't really see it. But we'll preview the WACA in our next podcast. But just in terms of talking about this next test, the pressure really is on England to turn something around and quickly. And they've got a lot of decisions to make before the start of that series.
Yeah, absolutely. It's huge. It's a huge test match now for England. You know, you're right. It's not out of the realms of possibility for them to get a result, the WACA. But Australia's record there is very intimidating. It's not quite as intimidating as the Gabatoir, but their record there is certainly very, very good. I think they've only lost one test match there in recent memory. So, that England would be viewing this as a must-win match, yeah. At the very least, a draw. I mean, a loss here, I think, would have huge ramifications. You know, what the WACA will offer Australia, like the Gabba, is pace and bounce. And Justin Langer, who's the Western Australian coach at the moment, has been in the papers this week saying that the WACA is back to its old best, you know, fast and bouncy.
And with Mitchell Johnson, he was, whether it's true or not. I'm sure that's what he's saying.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, Mitchell Johnson just takes wickets for fun there at the WACA, and it's probably Ryan Harris's favourite ground to bowl on. So, yeah, a huge, huge game this next test for England. You know, this pitch is probably going to be, along with maybe Sydney, the most helpful for them, I think. It doesn't have the same carry as the Gabba and the WACA, and possibly even the MCG. It'll be lower and slower. Perhaps the sort of pace factor, at least off the pitch, will be taken out of the equation. So that should be a little bit easier for the England batsmen. Yeah. They tend to play very well. Their record's not too bad at Adelaide. They won their last time around. And it'll suit Graham Swan. It should do at the back end of the match. Of course, it's a drop-in pitch now because of the groundwork, etc., that's been happening there. So it's difficult to say exactly how the pitch will play. But traditionally in Adelaide, it breaks up sort of days four and certainly day five, which brings Swan into play. So that'll suit him a lot more than the Gabba, and certainly the WACA will.
I remember a match on a drop-in pitch in New Zealand about 10 years ago when it started off really difficult to bat on and then just totally flattened out. And it was amazing. But does that still happen? I mean, that was when Graham Thorpe broke the record for the fastest test match double 100, and then Nathan Astle broke it in the next innings.
I remember that game.
I think New Zealand scored 500-odd in the last innings, but still lost.
In the Shield games that have been played this year, I read somewhere that I think there's something like, you know, in each of the games there's been 12 or 1300 runs and about sort of 13 wickets. So, you know, that suggests that, you know, it's going to be difficult for bowlers, I'd say. But these two sides are prone to a collapse, aren't they? So, you know, that's not to say that, you know, that Adelaide won't produce a result. But on evidence so far, you know, it's going to be hard slog for the bowlers. And there's been a lot of talk that Australia, you know, might rest one of their quicks with that in mind because of the hard slog that they might have to go through.
Oh, interesting.
With a view to saving one of them, like probably Harris or Johnson for Perth. Yeah. I don't think they would do that. I think Lehman's against this rotation policy that they had adopted under Mickey Arthur. But, More recently, Lehman has, you know, since becoming coach, has just said that, you know, we're not adopting that policy anymore. If they're fit, they play. We pick our best 11 every time.
Yeah.
And I think the only change they could possibly make is Faulkner for Bailey.
Yeah, to give them more bowling options. Absolutely. On expecting a long haul. Yeah. So what? Sorry, we've jumping a bit back and forth, but we're in the first test after England collapsed. It was pretty much game over. But we should just mention the batting of Warner and Clark that kind of sealed the game for Australia and gave them that massive lead. There's not really much point mentioning what happened in England's second innings because they lost the game by then anyway. But Warner 124 pretty much and Clark 113 both not far off a run a ball in imperious form, and especially with Clark previously looking a little bit dodgy against the short ball from Broad, but Broad isn't. You know, he's fairly quick, but he's not as quick as someone like Johnson or Harris.
No, and England don't have that enforcer. And I think if they did it, you know, it would make a big difference to them. And there's a lot of talk about their team as well, whether or not they can bring in somebody like perhaps a Finn or a Rankin.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that in a moment.
Yeah, Clark and Warner obviously play very, very well in that second innings. It's easier batting, obviously, when you're 160 in front after the first innings. So all the pressure's off you. But, Clark, he was peppered early on. And there was a stage there early in his innings, in the second innings, that he was given the strike by England. So they were happy to push the fielders out and give Warner the single and let the Australian captain on strike, almost like he was a tail ender. So there was, which was a, you know, a big call. And of course, you know, he handled it, you know, extremely well. He does actually pull and cut the ball quite well, Michael Clark. He just, I think, sometimes gets in these awkward positions. I don't think the short ball, whilst it will get him out, I think, every now and then, I don't think it bothers him as much as perhaps people think it does.
Yeah.
I don't think it bothers him perhaps like it would a Jonathan Trott.
So let's move on to the second test now. And you alluded to before that sides want more than just four bowling options when they're playing on a pitch like Adelaide. Australia, and you'd expect to see a bit of Steve Smith maybe. Shane Watson, is he going to be able to bowl yet? He obviously had this injury that he's been struggling with.
He's been, yeah, I mean, he's a lot fitter now. He's had more time. He only bowled two overs at the Gabba, sort of fairly meek overs, but he's been bowling a lot more in the nets over the last couple of days, and they expect him to be able to shoulder a big load as well. I think that a lot will depend on whether or not Faulkner plays and whether or not they can rest Harris. In particular, I think Johnson will be okay. I don't think he'll be as effective as he was at the Gabba or will be at the Wacker. Harris is a concern for them, a major concern because of his record, his injury record. And he's only ever, the most he's played in a series is four tests back-to-back. And of course, with Adelaide and Perth being back-to-back test matches, they're worried about the workload that he'll shoulder in Adelaide.
So tell us a bit about Faulkner's bowling style. Right arm.
No, he's left arm. I'd say sort of fast medium. His record at first class level is very, very good. He averages about 23 with the ball in first class cricket, but he has been playing in Tasmania, where up until the last couple of seasons it has been conducive to swing and seam. It's been low scoring games, so very difficult for the batsmen. So you have to sort of take that into consideration. But the other thing about Faulkner is he can bat.
Talking kind of genuine all rounder, like, or would he come in at below Haddin or above?
I think he would come below Haddin. Yeah. So they'd shift Haddin to six, but he would come in at seven, and he'd be a very good seven. Of course, he played at the Oval. Where he made his debut, and he, I think he scored 50 or 60 runs across the test, and took 8 wickets actually. He had a good start to his test career, and he'd be somebody that they'll be looking very seriously at if the wicket's going to be as flat as they expect it to be.
Yeah, move on to England now. Obviously, Jonathan Trott's problems are well documented. He's flown home. He's suffering with depression, and we won't talk about the illness specifically, but we will certainly talk about the effect it's going to have on the England team and what changes they might be looking at. Obviously, he was batting at three before the series. A lot of the question marks were over who would open for England. So I think the first thing to say is this kind of secures Carberry's place. There's even less chance that they will they won't play Carberry now. So Cook, Carberry, the two left-handers, look set to continue opening. And then England's number three position is anyone's, really. Bell said today he's happy to bat at three. Root is another possibility. I think they're probably the two options, really, aren't there? I think if someone comes in, then they'll bring them into bat at six. And obviously the other batsmen in the squad, Gary Balance, Stokes and Bairstow. So it's going to be between those three. Balance scored a 50 in the warm-up game at Alice Springs yesterday, which, you know, at least it shows that he wasn't overwhelmed by the fact that he knew he had to impress. He knew there was pressure on him to perform, and he did score some runs. A lot of people are saying Stokes because of his bowling as well. Maybe that would give England the option to bowl Panesar at Adelaide, which I'd love them to do. I don't think they will. But that's what that's what happened in India. They still beyond me why he didn't play in the first test, but he didn't. They lost, brought him in, and then turned that series around. And what are you expecting from England? What do you think the most likely course of action will be with Trott dropping out?
Well, firstly, I'd just like to wish Jonathan Trott all the best.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sad thing for him. I thought it was dealt with, very well by the England setup. I think, personally, they will play Joe Root at three. I think the theory behind that is that Ian Bell has played very, very well at five, and his record actually at three, very similar to Clark, the argument of Clark at four or five. Bell, his record at three isn't as solid as it is at five. And I think they'll be reluctant to remove that sort of stability, particularly with the runs that he gave them there when they were sort of two and three down early on. During the series over here in the summer, in the English summer. So I think they see Bell as a bit of a middle-order banker, so they'll be reluctant to move him. So I see Root playing at three. And number six could go to anybody. I mean, I personally, for England, if I was an England fan, I like the idea of Stokes because of the extra bowling option, which I think they may need. He does, bowl with a heavy ball. And he's a decent bat. He tends to be a player, from what I've seen of him so far, particularly in the one day format, an aggressive style of player. I quite like that option. I think they'll probably go Bairstow or perhaps Balance. I don't think Stokes will play. I mean, Stokes hasn't done himself any favours either with bat or ball in this match in Alice Springs. He's been hammered with the ball, as all the quicks were. Only the spinners sort of saved England any blushes. But and Bairstow got a few runs as well. Down the order. I think he got maybe 38 or 40, early 40s, not out before Bell declared in this warm-up match. And, of course, as you say, Balance got 50. I think they'll be reluctant to go with him. He's young. This is a big game to bring somebody like a Gary Balance in. So I think Bairstow will bat at six and Root will bat at three.
Yeah, Bairstow 31, not out in the warm-up game. Stokes 28 and Balance 55 from 134 balls. So he's had a good bit of time at the crease in, pretty oppressive hot conditions. Like I say, he's not done himself any harm. And he was run out as well, actually. I don't know. Obviously, the game wasn't televised. I don't know the details of that. But, I don't know. Part of me thinks they might go with Balance, but yeah, I think it's kind of totally up for grabs. And the point is that I wanted to make is that neither of the two players that I would actually want to be next off the block are even in the touring party. So there's not much you can do about that. James Taylor, I don't know what the situation is with him. I don't really understand why he's not even in the performance squad. There must be something that we don't know about there. That's all I can think of. But for me, he should be in the squad.
I think I'd be considering, if I was in the England setup, playing Panizzar. You know, I think with Adelaide traditionally being sort of you know, a slower wicket and breaking up towards the back end of the match, I think he will definitely come into play with Swan. And the two spinners can, you know, providing, of course, that they're offering that the captain the ability to sort of rotate quicks. It provides those guys with a rest as well. I mean, I like the look of Panizzar, Swan for Adelaide, but I think they'll go safety first, and I think it'll be Besto, Root. No, that's probably the only change they'll make. But we haven't mentioned, of course,
Brezza,
I think will definitely come in for Tremlett.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think England will be worried about their batting, and I also think that given the way Brezza played in the warm-up games, he's shown he's fit, and he on a pitch like that is not going to be any less of a pick than Tremlett with the ball. And also, Tremlett is seen as a bit. Brezhnev is seen as a bit of a talisman for the England team. They've got a really good record of how many tests they won when he's played.
Yeah, definitely. And he's another one that bowls a heavy ball.
Yeah.
And like you say, they will be concerned about their batting and where their runs are coming from.